This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
The details behind the Diddy indictment, Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Connor Rally, do you agree with that? Mikael Williams, do you think he'll be there for us if we stay? Again, this is all predicated on us still being there at 15. Do you think does that make sense?
I wonder, because Mikael is a one-of-one athlete, is a defensive end that's built in a lab. I wonder if he's one of those classic guys that just shoots up after he works out and crushes the combine, and you're maybe willing to overlook some of the statistical struggles, so to say, in his time at Georgia. Never had more than 5 sacks in a season. 4 of his sacks this year came in 2 games against Texas. So there are some production questions when I think it comes to Mikael. But I think he's a guy who his best football is ahead of him, and not dissimilar to Trayvon Walker, who shot all the way up to being the number one overall pick in the draft and has produced back-to-back double-digit sack seasons for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I think that there's a chance that he's there at 15, but I'm also going to acknowledge that he's a guy that is sort of built to shoot up at draft ranking following the NFL combine, which is for next week in Indianapolis.
Yeah, look, I'd be over the moon if we had Mikael Williams at 15, but all those things you just said are accurate. Most of the mock drafts also feel that when he gets to the combine, all those things, he will pop. Because one thing, George, and by the way, do we know who his representation is? Because it seems like the Georgia players as a whole always seem to have the best combine workouts. The only guy that really struggled, and there were a number of reasons for that, was Jalen Carter with all the stuff he was dealing with the tragedy. But usually dog players pop around the next few weeks.
Right, and that's something, too, where, like, sometimes guys don't work out. Brock Bowers famously didn't work out last year, and I actually think that kind of hurt him, dropping him down to number 13 with the Raiders, and then you see him having the year that he has. I think the guys in particular that are in that sort of first-round mention right now for Georgia, those guys are all incredible athletes. Jalen Walker is going to test very well in the short area quickness drills. And Malachi Starks, in my opinion, might be the best athlete, one of, if not the best athletes in this draft. And I think the combine is really going to accentuate that. And so you factor in Mikael Williams there with the rare height, weight, and speed measurables that he has. It's no surprise that Georgia takes these guys who are great athletes and then turns them into great football players. And that's how, more often than not, they produce great football teams.
I want to ask you about the quarterback's position, specifically about Puglisi. Is he more talented than Gunnar Stockton? And will that show in the spring as these guys have a real chance to compete for the starter's job?
I think he has maybe perhaps more upside at this stage in his career. Gunnar is in his fourth year in the program. I think he kind of is what he is. I think, you know, those 2 games against Texas and Notre Dame, which are 2 of, if not the toughest games you're going to open your real career against, sort of show maybe what some of his limitations were. But at the same point in time, like, I think Gunnar showed some real flashes in those games, whereas Puglisi is sort of that classically talented, tantalizing prospect. It's the guy that Todd Monken liked as a high school recruit. This is a guy that Mike Bobo thought very highly of as well. He's got a cannon for an arm. I think, again, he's not, you know, that Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson type athlete, but he's not exactly a statue back there either. And so I think he's capable of extending plays with his legs. I think the big thing with Ryan and going into this spring practice and offseason is just how wide is the gap in terms of the knowledge of the Mike Bobo system in comparison to Gunnar Stockton, because Gunnar has a multi-year edge in that standpoint. He has taken more reps. Ryan Puglisi has not yet thrown a collegiate pass. And so I think the knowledge of the offense is the big thing. How much can Ryan make up in that regard? Because I believe, as many Georgia coaches do, in the talent that he has. But as we've seen under Kirby Smart of late, he tends to sort of side with the experience when it comes to choosing a quarterback here. And I wonder if it's going to be too much for Ryan Puglisi to make up in that manner.
It is Connor Riley with us, guys, from Dog Nation here on the WaitForIt.com hotline. I just read your article you posted 3 hours ago. Who is Taylen Taylor, and what's he going to be at wide receiver?
Yeah, Georgia, for as talented as a recruiting class as they always seem to sign, Taylen Taylor is the first five-star wide receiver that the Bulldogs have brought in since George Pickens back in 2019. That might not seem like a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
First six recruiting classes ago, there's a lot that has transpired there. And you look at the issues that Georgia has had at wide receiver of late, this is the type of player that they haven't had. Just a very polished already player. I think a guy whose skill set, from what we saw at the high school level, translates to making an immediate impact. He's not one of those rare athletes that has to sort of learn how to play the position. He's a guy that comes in with a lot of ready-made skill sets that I think can help this Georgia offense. And when you look at what they have at wide receiver and what they brought in, Zachariah Branch, what does he look like? A fellow former five-star prospect who I think has yet to really become a true every-down wide receiver. I think Taylor has some of those skills already, and if he's able to make the physicality jump that comes from playing at the high school level to playing in the SEC, I think that he's got a real chance. You know, I'm not saying he's going to lead Georgia in receiving or have a Jeremiah Smith-type season, but he's got a chance to be a real dependable target for Gunnar Stockton, something at the end of last year I don't think he had very many of when he was playing against Texas and when he was playing against Notre Dame.
Leadership vacuum or void? Who steps up? Oscar Delp? I mean, who's going to be the guys, in your opinion, as we move towards spring and start to hear more about this?
It's a very interesting question there, Carl, because I think this is one of the things in diagnosing this past season. That leadership quality just was not there the way that it was, certainly in 2021 or 2022. And look, you know, when you lose guys like Nolan Smith, when you lose guys like Jordan Davis, you understand that they don't come along all that often. And so I think moving into this 2025 team, you know, Oscar Delp is someone who I think really grew as a leader and as a player in the back half of the season, and I think him coming back next year is going to help. I think Dylan Bell is someone who's been with this program for a long time, and that helps there in that regard. And, you know, in this modern age of college football where transfer portal, NIL, et cetera, you just see fewer and fewer four-year players. And so it's guys that fit that mold that I think are going to be able to go out there and do that. And you combine that with some of the guys that have already played a lot that are younger players, Lawson Lucky at tight end, C.J. Allen, an inside linebacker, is somebody who has played a ton. Even, you know, a second-year guy like, say, a K.J. Bolden or a Nate Frazier, those guys, because of their time in this Georgia system already, they've got a chance where if they're willing to be vocal and they're willing to be leaders, there's an opportunity there for them to be that. Now, how strong are they in comparison to guys that have been through the wars and been through the ups and downs? And might I add, you now, as we move further and further away from those 21 and 22 title teams, have been on teams that have won national championships. I think that's going to be something that's going to be interesting to watch, is how do these younger players step into those leadership voids?
All right, buddy boy, is Mike White now on the hot seat? Because just a few weeks ago, it sure sounded like this team was going to the tournament. Now it's 16-10, 4-9, by the way, in the SEC. They can't hold leads. They either get blown out of the gym, like the up Stegman this week against Missouri. I'm also a little angry because I freaking bet this one in Vegas. But getting back to the big picture, Carl, what is Mike White? What is the expectation level from the AD with Josh Brooks? And what's going on here?
One, Mike White is not on the hot seat here. Look, it's, I think, been a disappointing stretch for Georgia basketball. We're not going to sugarcoat it. it's understandable that they're losing some of these games. Look, the SEC is just at a different level this year than I think any college basketball conference we've ever seen. And Georgia's next two games don't get any easier. They're against the number one team in the country on the road, and then they're home against the number two team in the country at home in Stegman next Tuesday against Florida. I think the disconcerting thing, or the thing that worries you, is that they've shown that they have the talent. And this is, in my opinion, in the 10-ish years I've been doing this, as talented a Georgia basketball team as there has been. But they just have not been able to finish games. And Ace Newell is going to be a lottery pick in the NBA draft next year, so he's gone. And in the transient nature of college basketball these days, it's really difficult to project who's going to be on your team year to year. And so when you see them take this step back, you wonder, okay, what does the future of this program look like? Tom Crean got 4 years, and Mike White, in my opinion, has done a lot more than Tom Crean has done. And Josh Brooks was the one that went out there and brought in Mike White. He wasn't necessarily a super popular hire at the time that he was brought in. I think Mike White has raised the floor of Georgia basketball on what we can expect, to where I think, as you point out, Mike, like, it's not unreasonable to expect Georgia to contend for an NCAA tournament berth. And right now they are, in fact, doing that. But when you see a team like Missouri, who didn't win a game in the SEC a season ago, are able to flip their roster and be a top 25 team and be a lock at this point in February to make the NCAA tournament, I do think it's fair to start wondering when Georgia and Mike White are going to get to that point. They've got three games at the end of their season at Texas, at South Carolina, Vanderbilt. With the way things are gone, they're going to have to win all three of those and maybe a game in the SEC tournament to get into the NCAA tournament. But they still have the ability to do that. It's just, I can understand why some might be frustrated with what we have seen from this team, especially of late, where they play well for a half, and then it just seems like they forget how to play basketball in the final 20 minutes of a game.
Connor, though, doesn't it make it even more imperative that the SEC is stacked and loaded, and they're going to send probably more teams to the tournament this year than ever before? Like, doesn't that add more pressure?
I think it does, and I think it certainly ratchets up pressure for Mike White going into year four to at least get Georgia there. And look, they're in the conversation now, and it's hard, I understand, to see that Georgia is last four in, first four out, right there on the bubble, and juxtapose that with, look, they're still losing games, and I think, as Mike expressed, it's the manner in which they're losing these games that can be so frustrating. It's still a very talented team, and they're able to, I think, play with some of these guys. The other thing, too, and this isn't an excuse, it's a very young team. They don't have a lot of seniors. They don't have a lot of guys that have been through things. Blue Kane, Silas Demery, these are guys still, for as long as we've known them in the Georgia basketball sphere, still only in their second seasons. And so if Mike White, again, he's built off where this program was a season ago, I think the problem that he is fighting against is that everyone in the SEC themselves has gotten better and has ratcheted up. And so while Georgia has made gains in that regard, no program in the SEC has gone longer to making the NCAA tournament than Georgia, who last did it in 2015. And if they don't make it this year, it'll have been over a decade since it last happened. And that puts even more pressure entering next season, which isn't where you want to be if you're trying to sell this program moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just frustrated for a lot of dog fans. We touched on it, just the way things are going. And just, it just seems like it's – and Mike White was a good hire. He was but here's the thing. He kind of did the same thing in Florida. He wasn't bringing home the bacon with the Gators in Gainesville.
Mm. Yeah, and some people think he took this job to sort of get off the hot seat at Florida there. But
get out before the posse.
You look at what Florida has done in replacing him. They bring in Todd Golden, who is a well-thought-of coach. Florida's the number two team in the country right now, and they seem like someone who's poised to make a deep NCAA tournament run. And Florida has, understandably, a better basketball history than Georgia, certainly in the last 30 years. But I think you're very justifiable if you're a Georgia fan wondering, hey, why can't we do something like that, or why can't we make these quick turnarounds that you see a Missouri make, that you see a Kentucky make after moving on so quickly from John Calipari. Not saying that you have to beat Kentucky, but you've seen teams come in, flip rosters, and achieve quicker success in this day and age of college basketball. And you compare that to Georgia, who just has not been able to do that for whatever reason.
Great stuff, Connor Riley. Tell the people where they can follow you.
Yeah, you guys can follow me on Twitter at @KConnorRiley.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Tony Pauline joining us here on the show. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning. Thanks. It's always good to start off the morning with a little Led Zeppelin.
You know, right. They did that just for you. We remembered the conversation we had when we had you on last. I know you're a big Led Zeppelin fan, and it's on your Twitter bio as well.
There you go.
Good memory.
So it's out there. I want to get to your the mock draft that you have, the latest one, and in light of the news that Cam Ward just made, issuing his warning to NFL teams that basically he's going to make them pay when they face him if they're not the ones to draft him, and you have him at number one going to the Tennessee Titans. Why do you think he'd be a good fit there, or that he will end up there overall?
Well, I mean, he's going to be the first quarterback taken. I think the Will Levis experiment has failed in Tennessee. Can't blame him because they took him in the second round. He wasn't an early first-round pick. And they have a lot of holes in Tennessee. I could see them basically talking with other teams at the combine about maybe trading down and getting a package because they've got so many holes. But when you have the opportunity to draft a really good potential franchise quarterback, you got to take it. So unless somebody blows the Titans away with a package of picks, you know, to move up to get Cam Ward, I think he goes there. It makes sense.
Tony, you've got a guy that I don't think I've seen anyone have Nick Skorton as high as you do in your mock, which is going 19 to Tampa. He's a guy that me and Mike watched a good bit of this, and he actually knows what he's talking about because he played in the league. I don't, but I listen to him. And we loved Skorton on the film. Why do you love him so much?
He's got a lot of upside. He's very athletic. He's a guy who not only makes plays off the edge up the field against the quarterback, but if you watch him, he's got the athleticism to turn and chase the action and pursuit. You can drop him off the line of scrimmage and play him in space on zone blitzes. And I think the way Tampa structures their defense with Todd Bowles, I think he's a perfect fit. The other thing is, you know, certain positions end up going much earlier in the draft than people think. You talked about Cam Ward, obviously the overdrafting of quarterbacks, offensive tackles. And when there's a good amount of pass rushers in the draft, they tend to go much earlier because, you know, how do you stop the Cam Wards of the world? Well, you got to rush them. You got to get in their face with guys like Nick Scowden.
Tony, I want to stay right there real quick, and you have James Pierce going 15th overall, the Falcons. Look, I think anybody in Atlanta right now would welcome an edge rusher, especially with somebody the upside of James Pierce. I do find it interesting that, you know, you've got Pierce taking four picks ahead of Nick Skorton, and I think most people kind of agree with that, but tell me what the upside is for a guy like James Pierce and why Falcons fans should be really happy if that is, in fact, the guy they're going with.
He's probably a little more versatile, a little more explosive. He seems a little faster on film. You can do more things with him in the sense that I just mentioned how Skorton is good changing direction, getting out in space and making plays. Pierce is better. He's probably faster off the edge. Pierce has got to. It's going to be interesting. His measurements of combine are going to be very interesting and something to watch because on film he looks like a tall, thinner guy, and you have to wonder how he's going to hold up against the run. But if you just want a guy off the edge that's going to create havoc in the opponent's backfield and chase the quarterback, Pierce is one of the better guys in this draft.
We've got Tony Pauline with us on the WadeFord.com hotline, consulting editor and draft analyst for SportsKita. Tony, so if the Falcons do end up taking Pierce with that 15th overall spot, then do you think they end up addressing a corner maybe in the second round? Who do you think might be available?
Yeah, I mean, I think a cornerback, maybe an interior defensive lineman, maybe a safety. I think it's going to be a defensive-oriented draft. You know, if you're looking for a cornerback in round two, maybe Trey Amos of Mississippi, started his career at Louisiana, went to Alabama. If he's there, I think that would be great value for them. He could go a little bit earlier. The cornerback class really drops off. You're going to have a lot of cornerbacks taken within the first 42 selections, and then it tends to drop off. So if a guy like Amos is there, a guy like Azir Thomas happens to be there, then you got to jump all over them because those are good players that would be outstanding values where the Falcons would be selecting in the second round.
Tony, one of the guys that's kind of really gained a lot of steam, and he was one of the best players as an edge rusher in college football, was Mike Green. You know, he's got a lot of the tools. He's quick. He's got some power. He can shed blocks in a run game. He along with Donovan Ezeraku, led the college football, and they were 1-2 in sacks this year. You have Mike Green lower in the first round, and if I'm not mistaken, I don't see Ezeraku at all in your first round. What do you make of those two guys?
Yeah. Well, I'd be shocked if Ezeraku goes in the first round. He's a great college player, 6'1", 245, not super fast, a good pass rusher. He's at best, I believe, a day two pick. I would be shocked if he gets in the first round. But then again, you know, when you get towards the end of round one, there are a lot of surprises, and this is not a top-heavy draft where you've got a lot of players that have legitimate first-round grades. You only got about 18 or 19 guys with legitimate first-round grades. So you could see a surprise in there. I'd be shocked, though, if he goes in the first round. Mike Green, I'm going to disagree with you on the sense that I think he's going to struggle against the run. I know everybody saw that play against Josh Connerly during Senior Bowl practices where he basically knocked Connerly back, and that went viral. But if you were there, if you talked to people, it was more Connerly was not properly set, and Green, to his credit, took advantage of it. So Green is an outstanding pass rusher. He's going to get a little bit stronger. Take what I said about the James Pierce and kind of multiply that as far as the fact that he's a taller, thinner guy, and you wonder how he's going to hold up on a snap-in, snap-out basis against the run. He's got a lot of upside, but I think Mike Green's going to need a little bit of work, especially in the weight room, to add some bulk and strength to that frame to hold up against the run on Sunday.
Tony, I'm so glad to hear you say that about Josh Connerly. The day after that goes viral, I'm going in here going, that's the danger of a left tackle moving to right tackle in a one-on-one drill at the Senior Bowl. Obviously, you know, bad technique, all the above. He just hadn't played a ton. So I love hearing you say that. Look, we are obviously in Atlanta, and Georgia fans here have been clamoring for Georgia players to be taken by the Atlanta Falcons. I think, Tony, that you might actually be the first guy that we've talked to with a mock that has all three first-round Georgia players coming off the board before the Atlanta Falcons pick. Obviously, I don't want to see Jalen Walker go to the Carolina Panthers. I think there is some upside to Mykael Williams. Malachi Starks is a guy who you've slotted at 13. I believe that to be the highest I've seen Malachi Starks. Let's focus in on him for just a second. Why do you think Malachi Starks is a guy that could rise up the draft boards and possibly go somewhere like the Dolphins at 13?
Well, first of all, the Dolphins need two safeties. And if he doesn't go to 13 with the Dolphins, he could very well go to number 14 with the Colts, who also need a safety. Now, this is not a real good safety class. So if you want a good safety, and Malachi Starks is hands down the best safety in this draft, you better grab him early. Starks is a well-built, explosive defensive back. He's a safety that you can use over the slot receiver, and he's not a liability. He can play center field, go sideline to sideline. A lot of safeties can't do that coming out of college. Compared to the rest of the safeties in this year's draft, you know, he is the complete package. I don't agree with drafting for need, but he's also a highly rated player in this draft. I mean, I have him right now on my board as the number 11 player. So it's not like it would be a big reach for either the Miami Dolphins or the Indianapolis Colts to take him in that area. He's a good player. He's got upside. You can use him in nickel packages as almost a third cornerback. And there's a lot to like about his game.
Tony, so you have Shedeur Sanders going at 3 to the New York Giants. And I want to go back to what you said about Cam Ward, because you said he is, you know, the first quarterback that's going to come off the board. So what separates those two?
Oh, a couple different things. I think Cam Ward is very much like Jaden Daniels in the sense that his game is on the upswing. I mean, you look at Jaden Daniels before he was the second pick of the draft. The last season and a half of his LSU career, He just got better and better. And Cam Ward's game last year really just took off. I mean, from the first game he played after transferring from Washington State against Florida, you could see he was a completely transformed quarterback. And I put a premium on quarterbacks that are playing their best football. Shedeur Sanders, he's got a lot of ability. I didn't see a lot of improvement in his game between 2023 and 2024. Fundamentally, he needs a lot of work because he's thrown off his back foot. He holds the ball too long in the pocket, which Cam Ward does to an extent. Just a lot of bad fundamentals from Shedeur Sanders, but he's got the underlying ability. He's got the physical skills. The tape in 2022 and 2023 at Colorado was outstanding. Now, Colorado and his father didn't help him because they didn't bring in many good offensive linemen, and the poor guy was getting beat up week in and week out. But I think right now Cam Ward is more NFL-ready. He's more polished. He throws with better fundamentals and better techniques than Shedeur Sanders, which puts him, you know, ahead of the Colorado quarterback.
Tony, great insight. We appreciate having you. Can't wait to see how the draft ends up playing out.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Thanks for having me.
Joining us now, he's the head coach of the number one college basketball team in America. Great friend of the show, long time. Bruce Pearl joining us. Coach, thanks so much for being with us. Good morning.
Steak, good morning. It's great to be with you and Sandra.
Always. I've been doing this a long time in Atlanta, almost 30 years. And I got to tell you, I never thought I'd see the day that two schools in Alabama would dominate the conversation in February in the sports world. The way, of course, you and, Alabama and Auburn did last week. So I know you come from the same neck of the woods as I did. When we grew up, Alabama-Auburn wasn't the number one college basketball conversation. So what was that like last week? And were you surprised the level of hype around that game?
Well, it wasn't something that you were ever predicted 20 years ago, that's for sure. And, we still call it the Iron Bowl, even though it's basketball. And you'd have thought that there would have been a 1-2 Iron Bowl at some point along the way, but there really had never. And so it's definitely a first. And, it was great to be a part of history. But it's only February. If that game was in March or in early April, it would have mattered even more. And yet it still mattered a lot.
It mattered if you saw your kids. It mattered to your alumni and your fan base. It mattered at Toomer's Corner. And I know you want to celebrate the moments. Was that a time for you, your family, and your team and your school to at least be able to enjoy Saturday night?
Well, you know what? We traveled back from Tuscaloosa, so we didn't even get to Toomer's Corner in time to roll it and to enjoy it. And trust me, we play Arkansas tonight, so we were pretty much ready to go and on to the next thing. But, the next day the guys went to the baseball game and let the fans love on them. Our women had a basketball game, so the same thing. So they definitely are enjoying the season, enjoying the opportunity to make history. But they also recognize this is the toughest league and probably the history of college basketball. And we have a chance to get 12 or 13 teams out of 16 into the NCAA tournament. And that's never happened before.
What do you attribute the absolute dominance? And I agree with you. We're both, obviously college basketball, purists and have loved this game for a long time. How has the power of college basketball ended up where it has? And I agree. The number one conference that's ever happened in college basketball history.
Take, you look at the SEC, they say it just means more. And obviously we have the SEC Network in a partnership with ESPN. We dominate in intercollegiate athletics. And I'm talking about men. I'm talking about women. I'm talking about revenue-producing sports. I'm talking about the Olympic sports. Top to bottom, it's incredible. And I think part of it is if you look at the footprint of the Southeastern Conference, we are in the southeastern part of the United States. There are pro sports here, but, we don't have any pro sports in Alabama. There are pro sports in Mississippi. We are the pro sport teams. And there's just tremendous support from the alumni and from donors. And presidents and athletic directors gone out and hired great coaches, made commitments. One thing that's really cool, Steak, is you can't get a ticket to an SEC game. I mean, almost every game that we play in, whether it's certainly home, every game sold out, but now we're selling out every game on the road.
Yeah.
Part of it is the Auburn family is traveling, but I think the SEC has really just enjoyed and embraced this basketball. There's been a commitment to NIL across the board, and the investment's been made and we're reaping the benefits.
Is the quality of players that much better in the South? Atlanta's been a hotbed for you. Talk about the other cities here that the SEC has wrapped a big collective hug around and said, we're grabbing players throughout the Southeast. Not that you don't recruit nationally, but man, you don't have to go far from Auburn to find yourself a pretty great starting five.
We've got seven guys in the NBA from Atlanta in Auburn in the last 8 years. I mean, just it's unbelievable. And so, yeah, high school basketball, you can't sleep on it in Atlanta. It's the best. Texas is, you know, probably next. California's got a bunch because of the size. But, no, there's definitely been a trickle-down theory. Iron sharpens iron. All those things are the factor. And we have an older team. The other thing that's happened in college basketball, the transfer portal, is, you know, it's harder for freshmen to have impact now because everybody's in that transfer portal getting older players. There's not much of a difference between a, let's say, 52-year-old guy and a 48-year-old guy. But there's a huge difference between a 22-year-old guy and an 18-year-old guy. And that's proven every night.
Yeah. I mean, building a team around older players, you've seen the success of late. I was going to ask you, you have maybe the best player in the country, certainly are up there in Jahni Broome. Cooper Flagg comes out. It's headline news this morning saying, I'd love to come back to Duke. That had them salivating, obviously, in Durham. Is the atmosphere ripe with the NIL money, with the collective dollars, with you know, the reasonable rookie contracts in the NBA that we're able to see absolute top one, two, or three players think about coming back to college the way it was when we were growing up watching?
Boy, I tell you what, that's a new one in the sense that the lottery picks, the lottery guys are still all getting really good contracts. But if you're not a first rounder, let's just say a first rounder, they're all going to the G League. They're all in two-way contracts. And what NIL has definitely done is it's definitely lowered the quality of the second round because these guys are better off developing and playing and being able to be compensated through the NIL and not have to rush the process. Because, look, you know, it's not how much you make stake. It's how long you can make it. And so your first contract doesn't mean a whole lot if you can't get a second and a third. And so these guys are way more ready to get that second and third contract if they are a little older. So I do understand where Cooper Flagg is coming from. And if Cooper Flagg does come back next year, you can write Duke in at the start of the
season.
They'd
be in a pretty good shape.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
What was that? You guys, you played them in Cameron. I mean, listen, you've been in every atmosphere in college basketball, including the one at Auburn is amazing. But Auburn-Duke earlier this year, Cooper Flagg and Jahni Broome, I mean, that's what college basketball is all about.
It was special, yeah. It really, really was, and the SEC ACC challenge was great. Our league obviously dominated it,
yeah.
But you know, getting Duke at Duke was tough. And look, Duke is a very young, talented team, but Coach Shire's done a great job of getting some mixing in some transfer portal guys. And how about this stick? How about this one? Right now, the top three teams in college basketball right now, ranking 1, 2, 3, are Florida, Duke, and Auburn. And all three are coached by Jewish coaches.
I was going to say
that. Just going to throw that out.
Here we go.
I throw that out there for you.
All three mishpul, because that is it did not go unnoticed. Sandra, what did I say to you earlier? We got to ask him about all three top three teams in America, Jewish coaches. Which my theory is pretty simple, Coach. As Jewish guys, we realize at a pretty early age, just like you at Sharon High, our future is probably not that second NBA contract you were talking about. Our future is probably on the sidelines or in the front office. Is that safe to say?
No, there's a little bit of that. But I tell you the other thing it says. First of all, John Shire and Todd Golden were pretty good players. Bruce Pearl was not.
Yep.
But I think the other thing it tells you is what a great country this is. What a blessing it is that we were able to be in this country. Yes, there are obstacles for everybody, and certain based on religion or based on color or based on different factors, there are challenges that people face in this country, except they're not roadblocks. They're simply obstacles that need to be navigated. You can be anything in this country. You work your ass off, and there is opportunity available for everyone. And so I'm just grateful. I am so grateful to live in the greatest country in the world. We're not perfect, but we are. The land of opportunity.
Well, given the year that we just had for Jewish people, I think there's a lot of love for the way you've been outspoken about not just anti-Semitism, but in general. So that does not go unnoticed in a community like Atlanta either. Bruce Pearl with us, head coach of the Auburn Tigers. Rick Pitino's speech at halftime of the Friar game, it's gone absolutely viral. I'm not sure if you watched it, but laid into his kids. I don't know how you were born, how you were taught, but life is about adversity, yada, yada. The cameras in the most intimate moment of your halftime locker room berating your kids. How comfortable are you with it? It's everywhere now. Pitino's gone viral for all the right reasons for St. John's, especially because they won that game. But it is a different era. We normally would never have access to a speech like that.
No, but you know what? That's real talk. Obviously, you know, he challenged his players. He challenged their toughness. He challenged their mental toughness. I don't think the kids are any different today than they used to be. I do think we're different as parents. We don't let our kids fail. We want to solve other problems for them. I want to spoil my kids, but I'll slap the rotten right out of them. And I don't think we're doing that enough. If your kid's not starting, if he's not batting third, if he's not pitching, you're transferring him to another travel ball team. The problem is he's only 8 years old. And we're teaching the kids to flee, not fight. You know, if I couldn't pitch, my dad said, you know what? You know why you can't pitch? You won't throw strikes.
Yeah.
You know why you're not batting third? Because you can't lay off the high ones. I mean, that's how we used to, and so we as parents have got to hold our, you know, love our kids, support our kids, help our kids, but at the same time, hold them accountable. And I think that is something that's changed, not so much the kids.
Finish it up with Bruce Pearl, another monster game for you tonight. The SEC never lets up. What do you think about when you see John Calipari coaching Arkansas, which proves never believe you're too secure or never be too secure at any job in life? Again, another coaching legend. And what do you take of the fact that he's coaching at Arkansas and what that says about the state of college basketball and your conference in general?
Well, I mean, the fact that he's at Arkansas just makes the league so much stronger. You know, I mean, all of a sudden they become a national power. They get to recruit anybody and everybody. They went out and you know, had the best transfer portal recruiting of anybody in our conference. And he's got a loaded roster. He's got NBA guys on his bench. He's got his NBA guys out there on the floor. And right now they're playing pretty well. They won four out of the last seven games and probably could have won their last seven. Right now they're a dangerous team because they sit on the bubble and they need a signature win like this to get them in the tournament. So we're going to get the best of Arkansas tonight. We'll have our hands full.
Before we go, we grew up in the same era, same town, essentially. Who are three guys when you look at college basketball growing up or guys you've been with? But when you think of mentors or folks that you took so much from, are there two or three college coaches that represent that list?
Well, it starts with Dr. Tom Davis. I mean, he was my mentor at Boston College and Stanford, Iowa. And if you want to pay me a compliment, tell me my teams looked like the way Dr. Tom's teams looked, you know, the way we played. He taught me how to coach the game and the whole thing. I think just from a standpoint of, you know, going up against Billy Donovan when he was at Florida, you know, nobody did it better than Billy, and he was such a great competitor, great family, he was as good as I went against. And the best coach that I ever went up against, the most challenging coach I ever went up against, was Coach Pitino. And, of course, being at Boston College, when he was at Boston University, I saw him when he first got started as a young head coach, and he's just two steps ahead of all of us.
People don't realize Jim Calhoun was two blocks up the road coaching Northeastern. Rick Pitino was in his 20s coaching BU, and those two guys would be a Hall of Fame and literally a mile from each other with their two campuses. And I was going to those games as like a 15-year-old, so I consider myself
That's
lucky
awesome.
To have seen
wow.
that.
Yep. And Tom Davis was at Boston College. So
Jay Murphy, Martin Clark, the whole crew, right? Knew that team well.
No doubt.
Hey, good luck tonight, Coach. Always a pleasure. Thanks for what you're doing for the game of college basketball, always. And couldn't be more pleased to see what Auburn has become in college hoops.
All right, my brother. Thank you, Steak.
See you, buddy. That's Bruce Pearl, head coach of Auburn, the Tigers, number one in America.
In one corner, we've got 92.9 The Game's midday hosts, Andy and Randy, at a combined 12 feet, 3 inches, and just under 400 pounds.
I don't know, maybe same time.
don't know what his personal life is like.
Smoking Joe Patrick at an undisclosed height and weight because he likes to cause trouble.
I don't know what he's into.
We only see you in the summer.
It's true. None of my business. Hey, Joe. How are you?
What's going on, guys? What's going on?
I don't know, a lot, a little. I don't know. It's one of those weird times of year where it's kind of down, but everything's about to pick back up. Obviously, Combine is next week. All the Falcons folks will be up there. We're going to get a chance to talk to Raheem on Tuesday. We'll ask you about some of that stuff in a minute. But the cap goes up yesterday, reportedly, by about $22 million. I know it helps everybody to have more money, but is there like a specific example or a specific thought that you have about how it helps the Falcons particularly to have that extra bit of money?
Well, yeah, I mean, it definitely helps the Falcons. It helps any team really that is looking to get back above the cap and just kind of gives them more different ways they can do it because the cap number goes up, but the contracts that are already on the books are fixed costs. And so really it just makes it an easier number to get to. It just makes it easier for the Falcons to get, you know, salary cap compliant. Now, how much does that actually matter? Probably not a ton because, again, like you want to get to below the salary cap to the point where you're then competitive for free agents and such. And obviously everybody now has more money to spend on those free agents. And so it's just something we're seeing over and over again. And, you know, it's crazy to think about, and I'm sure Randy might have some thoughts about this, because these NFL players are now making like twice as much money as they were making the same players, you know, pretty much the same group of players were making like 10 years ago or so. And that's just, you know, it seems like, you know, Randy, you didn't get, you know, enough value out of that. That's how it feels. I feel like if it were me, I would feel
kind of
pissed.
I agree. No doubt about that. Damn right.
But yeah, I mean, I think it makes it a little bit easier for the Falcons for sure.
I wanted to get your thought on that, also on the salary cap, because the Falcons got a couple decisions to make and two specific players. One, because you can sign him in a Drew Dahlman, who's a free unrestricted free agent, and also Grady Jarrett with his number. Which is more likely with this new money to not worry about Grady? We're fine with the new cap money. We can you know, bring his number, or it's going out and trying to sign Drew Dahlman, because I don't know what his market is right now. We're talking about Drew Dahlman.
Yeah, you know, I think that actually the money makes it like more palatable, not just to like bring back Grady, but obviously I think it just gives you more kind of ways you can, you know, adjust his contract, whether that's, well, it would be through an extension and adding void years on the end to tack that on. But I think it just gives you more flexibility. And I would say it makes it less likely that he's off the team entirely. Although I never really felt that it was realistic that the Falcons were just going to cut Grady Jarrett. It always seemed like a situation where the most likely thing that happens is that you do get a reworked extension that allows them to shift some money to future years and make him less of a burden for the immediate future for this team. And I think that it's probably the opposite for Drew Dahlman, because, you know, it's like a stimulus to the entire league. It's like when the $1,000 checks went out, when everybody's got more money now to spend, his price goes up, you know, he's going to make more money. And that's how it's going to be generally, like every single offseason. I think as long as the salary cap keeps going up like this, you're going to continue to see new records being broken for, you know, the most expensive safety or whatever position. And you're also going to see, you know, players like Drew Dahlman, who may have before been, you know, valued at a certain number. That number is going to go up because teams just have more money to spend. And I think it's a tough one for the Falcons because, you know, they love Drew Dahlman. They make no, you know, bones about it. I know that fans and some analysts, and I know Chris Thomas, I'll call out Turtle in particular, has kind of been on him for the snapping issues. But I think the Falcons really, really value what he brings, both in what he is as a player, his athleticism, and also just how smart he is and kind of having to be that cerebral guy as a center. But, you know, I think that, you know, teams are going to come after him. And I've seen this number being floated around today of rumors that, you know, he could go for up to $20 million a year. And that is out of the Falcons' range with the constraints that they're already under. So if that's the number, he's not going to be a Falcon, but we'll see where it ends up. And I do think the Falcons will obviously make a huge push to try to get him back.
Okay, because that's kind of what I wanted to clarify, because you gave an example of different positions setting records and then sort of transition to him. Were you saying that that's what he's gonna do, or was those okay? Like, what do you think?
I saw that
$20 million number too, and that sort of made my eyebrows raise. But like, what did you anticipate it being for him?
I would still be surprised if, I mean, like the $20 million, like that number would really surprise me. I think that he was kind of being pegged for around like $13 million or before this.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
And I would say after this is you probably push that up by a million or two. You know, maybe teams then have a little bit more money to spend, so they're willing to maybe throw in a little bit more. But I will say this: if you're really looking to make him your centerpiece center, you know, I don't know how wise that is personally, because I do think that he has some deficiencies in his game. I still think he's by far the Falcons' best starting center.
Yeah.
I think that there's actually a pretty big gap between him and Ryan Neuzel, and if it is Neuzel as the center next year, then they'll have to work around that. But I still think if you're going to pay truly, truly top dollar for him, I don't know if that's the wisest way to spend money if you're a team looking to rebuild.
I think if they don't pay him, you got to draft a center,
yes.
Right? I mean, you
got. Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
You might use an early pick on something like that. I know Spotrac's market value is not gospel. It's sort of just a ballpark, but they have him at like 7.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Because, I mean, when I say
they said 3 years, $20 million, and that's the value of the full contract, 7-ish per.
I would say the thing is that he's the best one at his position on the market. So those guys are always going to push him at least to 10.
Now that helps.
That'll push him at least to 10, 12.
Good for him. Good time to be a free agent center.
Exactly.
JP, when you look, I mean, obviously, we all kind of know. We all think, let's go, that when we talk about the Falcons, you got to think. We think they're going to draft an edge rusher.
Not now. Now I think they're going to draft a center.
We think. I don't know who the first round center is, but we think that they're going to go figure out a way to go get some pass rush help here. We were talking about the franchise tag, and we know there's no way in hell they're franchising anybody like that. But other two guys who might be eligible, do you see either one of those guys coming back at a specific number? I'm talking about Judon and Simmons.
No, I don't. I don't. I think, just based on the way that the defense played last year, I think it would almost kind of be like a bad look from a PR perspective to bring one of those players back. And it's just, it's time to move on. Those are older players. It clearly didn't work out last year, unfortunately. I think everybody wanted it to, obviously. But, this defense, you got to kind of think about what this defense is going to look like, not just next year, but how it's going to look, down the road. And you've got to start laying those bricks in place right now. And that's where this draft is so important. I think this is probably the most important draft, obviously, because there's a lot of pressure on Terry Fontenot and this team to produce and be a playoff team next year. But also, when you just look at the cap situation, obviously, they're kind of behind the eight ball with what's happened at the quarterback position. So you've got to start hitting on some of these third, fourth, fifth rounders. And obviously, they're short with picks this year. We'll see if that maintains itself or if they are able to acquire any before the draft starts. But it's going to be so important for them to hit on some of these guys. And when you look around the league at the top teams, how many of them, have a center that they drafted in the third or fourth round who's playing at a really high level, or, a nickel corner, sure, or, the edge player. So, it's going to be obviously a super important draft. But like you said, Randy, I think this team has to address the edge position with their top capital they have this offseason.
Joe, we got 30 seconds. I know you were at the press conference yesterday for the introduction down there, Atlanta United. The expectations for this weekend?
Yeah. I mean, I think their team's all really excited. I'll be interested to see how it looks, because it looks like they could be down at least three of their back four in the defensive back line. It looks like both fullbacks are going to be out, and so they'll be using backups there. And then potentially at least one of their center backs could be out. Derek Williams did not train today. They hope to get him back tomorrow. So that will throw a wrinkle into things, but I think overall the squad, the coaching staff and the front office is just really excited for what this team's going to do. And I frankly am just thankful to have survived the press conference today. It was so cold and windy and that thing, my jaw was like seizing up. I could barely move my mouth to answer a question. So we got through that, and now we're just looking forward to Saturday.
Why didn't they do it inside?
It's a great question. You'll have to ask them. I would have been all for that.
Okay. All right, Joe, thank you.
Appreciate it, JP.
Right. See you guys.
Smoke with Joe Patrick there, 92.9 The Game, Falcons reporter, Atlanta United as well.
Executive Vice President and General Manager, and our friend Brandon Hutchinson joins us now live. I was going to say in studio, But instead, we're in this beautiful Campers Inn RV.
This is a studio.
I imagine, Brandon, that you're going around like your hair is on fire today.
Man, thank you guys for having me this morning.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Is y'all studio this nice? You got a fire in here.
I don't know. We got a fireplace. I swear to you, and he can test it, I have not sat down since 5 o'clock this morning. So jacked up right now.
Have you ever done a radio interview in a side of a camper? I mean, this might be a first
for everything. This might be my first, now that you bring it up. I don't know that I've ever sat in such fancy settings for a radio interview, but to answer your question, I got a great team here. So they've been working hard to get ready for the Ambetter Health 400 race weekend, and we're excited about it. We're glad that it's here. The weather's getting a lot nicer. It's no secret it's been cool in Atlanta these last few weeks, so
sure.
It's going to be a nice weekend.
Yeah, it looks like to me like the temperatures are going to go up by about 27 degrees just today before we get to the cars on track later today.
Yeah,
so.
Sunday it looks like it's going to be 60 right at it, which is beautiful weather.
Come on, I got to say
real quick, when I rolled up, my expectations were one thing. And these campers are more than I expected. But I expected to have a couple of little generators out there.
Yeah, like the little ones on the little wheels.
If you want to look out that window right there, there is a green industrial-sized generator that you use at a contractor site.
Just in case the lights go out on the Speedway tonight.
That's our partners from Sunbelt. But, yeah, Mike, if the lights go out on the Speedway, you're probably going to lose your generator.
I mean, so I don't know about that.
We're not on air at that point.
Yeah, no, I think we'll be good.
You
guys have done an incredible job. The track, when the cars changed years and years ago, NASCAR changed the racing, and some tracks struggled with the car tire concept. You guys went from two races, I went every year, to one, and now you have reconfigured this track. You've got the most exciting racing style in NASCAR. We race this on iRacing, and I know that it's a simulator, but
it's a lot of fun.
Brandon, you're so fast on that, and you get these runs, and it there's nowhere to go, and it is literally like short track racing at 185 miles an hour.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
I'm glad you said that. I sound like a bit of a homer when I say we have the most exciting racing in NASCAR. But, you know, you're right. Since 2022, when we increased the banking from 24 to 28 degrees, we've had the most exciting racing in NASCAR. And, you know, we're a 1.54-mile track, so we're an intermediate length. We race like a super speedway. But because we're a mile shorter than your typical Talladega or Daytona, we kind of race like a short track, so it's a perfect scenario for the fans. It's the most exciting racing on the circuit, but for the drivers, it's white-knuckle racing for 400 miles. And like you said, when you're in a sim trying to race it, it's a beast.
It is a beast. You said it's been reconfigured. I like to use the word reinvented because I don't think reconfigured actually does it. Just it's kind of you've reinvented and really created its own style here at Atlanta Motor Speedway to the benefit of the fans. To your point, Ambetter is obviously y'all's sponsor coming up on Sunday. Look, I don't have to name them all off, but I've been here with Quaker State on the label. I've been here with Quick Trip, the Folds of Honor, everything else. Talk about how that sponsorship with Ambetter kind of came about.
Well, you know, Ambetter's been a great partner with Speedway Motorsports for quite some time. They were at New Hampshire before they were at Atlanta Motor Speedway. And, you know, they came into this market, and really their mission is just to help people lead healthier lives. So they have a great, affordable line of insurance. You know, Centene is the parent company. So Ambetter Health is all about just keeping people healthy. So check them out. They will they'll have an option, much like Atlanta Motor Speedway and the ticket packages we have for this weekend. You know, they just try to make sure they have a price point that's right for everybody.
There you go.
So I've been looking over the festivities this weekend. I want to touch on this.
Bo's ready for the peach party.
Today, well,
I am too.
Today we're going to get cars on track. We're going to have the trucks and the Xfinity cars qualify. There's going to be an appreciation party from Thor Camper and the Fan Zone. Then tomorrow we get two races. In fact, during our show tomorrow, we're going to have the Xfinity race going live, which is really cool.
Insane.
I've never done that.
It's like a bucket list item for me, honestly.
But then you have the Peach Pit party in the infield, which is what I'm looking forward to. So, you know, just touch on a couple of the events and I mean, what's on El Presidente's list for this weekend?
Well, I was going to say, can we strap Bo into a bandolero tonight?
I mean,
El Presidente may be breaking into this bear in Burton's, but
there we go.
I'll tell you, you know, it actually started last night. Fans had a chance to get their cars on the high banks of Atlanta Motor Speedway to benefit Speedway Children's Charities. As you said, it continues tonight with the Thor Camper Appreciation Party. We've got Legends and Bandolero Racing on the Thunder Ring quarter mile track as well. It's all free for the fans. Free food, free drinks, free music, driver Q&As. You know, we have the 11th anniversary of the doubleheader. Kids are absolutely free on Saturday, so you can't beat that price. We're going to have 458 miles of racing on Saturday, absolutely free for the kids. We've got the party in the Peach Pit after that, Mechanical Bulls, laser light shows, firework party. American Cornhole League is going to have a cornhole tournament benefiting Speedway Children's Charities.
Can we get in that?
I don't want to have to show anybody up out there.
Absolutely, you can. Go to SpeedwayChildrensCharities.org and sign up now. I think the slots are going to be going quick. But, you know, it's really for us all about the experience, all about the party. We want people who choose to come to Atlanta Motor Speedway to get as much bang for their buck as they're going to get anywhere in the city. So we hope people will come out and see us. It's going to be a big time. The Amateur Health 400 race weekend is here. Hard to believe. Just a year ago, 0.07 of a second separated first from third.
I saw the FS1 special they had after the duels on FS1 last week about the finish for that, having all three drivers. Just an incredible. And look, I got to echo what you said. It's bang for the buck. It's incredible. I know you got to go real quick before we let you out here. You're on a tight schedule today. You got a lot of stuff this weekend. Like, this is your Super Bowl of the year, right? Is there anything that you look forward to more than most? And I'm not even – like, don't even give me the mandatory, I got to go shake this guy's hand or show – like, what's the one thing where you're like, this is sick? I saw videos of you taking cookies to the first campers the other day. Hats off to you. I just think that with everything on your schedule, what's the peak this weekend for Brandon Hutchins?
Y'all are going to run me out of here. It's the people.
Yeah.
It truly is.
I can believe
that. The best part of my weekend is getting to talk to our fans, finding out a little bit about them, where they come from, what their story is, how long they've been coming here. You know, we get to create memories. You know, we're putting on live entertainment for fans that work hard for their money. They choose where to spend it. So if they choose to spend it here, I want to spend a little bit of time talking to them. So I really look forward to that. But the racing itself, the racing gets no better. If you haven't seen the racing at Atlanta Motor Speedway, you got to come check us out. Go to AtlantaMotorspeedway.com. Find a price point that works for you and your family. But before I go, guys, I got to give a shout-out to all the workers that are out here this weekend.
It's a
big production putting these events on, from the security guards sitting at the tunnel to just everybody on track and just the level of detail that goes into making sure that this weekend comes off without a hitch. They're human, so we make mistakes. But right. We work real hard to try to get it right.
Well, look, man, I think I speak for both of us. We appreciate everything, and it's been nice to be out here, man, and hanging out with you guys. And you're right. I talked to the guy working the tunnel on the way in last night. Had a nice Falcons beanie on. I gave him a rise up. Told him appreciate it. He let me on in. Look, I promised your guys. I've had you here at 8:10, so I'm 2 minutes overboard. But thanks for hanging out with us, man. It's a fun weekend, and obviously appreciate you having us on board. And look, if you guys haven't, go to AtlantaMotorspeedway.com and get your tickets, man, because it's going to be an action-packed weekend. So
I appreciate both of you guys giving me a few minutes to talk to your listeners. And it's going to be a big time. Hopefully they come out and see us. The weather's going to be phenomenal. So make your plans to be at Atlanta Motor Speedway this weekend.
All right, man. Appreciate you. Thanks for hanging out with us. And you get out of here and go on to your next thing. we'll try to continue on, man. Because
you can stick around and have a couple of, you know, couple
little
of,
owl and
couple
lagers, of,
yeah,
things like that.
Don't tempt me with a good time.
That line sounds familiar.
Oh, man. Thanks again. That's Brandon Hutchins, and obviously general manager here at Atlanta Motor Speedway, getting ready for an action-packed weekend, man. So, look, it's been an absolute pleasure to be out here so far. Squid Billy and myself, we got the caffeine rolling. Hopefully you do, too, and staying warm out there. And like we just talked to him, the temperatures are going to go up 25, 28 degrees just today. And then it looks like, 58, 60 degrees on Sunday. Come out and have a good time here at Atlanta Motor Speedway, watch some nice NASCAR racing. It's week two of the NASCAR season. I wanted to get that insight from Brandon because, and obviously, man, he's a guy who's very busy. He is. I don't really know how to explain his role in terms of this track and kind of compare it to other sports, because it's hard to look at venues, Bo, that only have one sporting event per year or two sporting events per year. But the people who run this event Like, this is, well, Super Bowl, man.
And I think that's the thing. I got two things. One, I'm a little distracted right now. I'll tell you why in just a second. But the second thing is, I think that's what that's what is important to know, that there is events constantly at Atlanta Motor Speedway. They have 5Ks, 10Ks kind of stuff. They have racing all the time at this place. I've seen Supercross here.
Monster trucks.
There's all kinds of events that they have here, and these guys are in charge of all of it. This is just their, you know, this is the biggest thing they do every year is when the big guys come, the Cup cars and NASCAR, and I've seen so many races here. I can tell you absolutely they do it right. Brandon's predecessor, Ed Clark, who used to run this track for years. I've been out there, and he does something just like Brandon does. He used to go out and be around the fans, and that's cool to see. They're us. They're one of us. I told you I was distracted. I saw a dude near our generator.
Okay.
And as you know, we have a generator that could literally run a construction site.
You need a trailer for it. It is a trailer. I'm sorry. You have to have a hitch to pull that.
I thought I was about to go out there and throw hands because, I mean, don't be touching my generator, man.
Throw the whopper.
Let me tell you something. That generator, I'm very selfish when it comes to my stuff, and don't touch my stuff.
Yeah. And look, man, I know we got to get to break in just a second. I'm still a little bit, Dylan, I still have a bone to pick with you, the whole 30 beers thing. I thought we knew each other, man. I really thought we were on.
My bad. I didn't want to
over the weekend.
That's like, what he said. 30 beers between two of you over the weekend.
Like
I feel so disrespectful. So you're telling me I'm gonna have four beers a day?
That's the average.
It felt like a little bit of a low ball. I'm sorry, but I didn't know it was that much of a low ball. Like I said, I won't test you guys. Guys, gangster again. That's on me. I'll take that one.
I brought about $300 myself worth of beer. Sweet. And I got to shout out my guy Chaz at New Realm who hooked me up. The amount of beer I brought from New Realm is you
waiting down the shocks in the back of your truck.
I just said it's over $300. Yeah. I mean, dude, I'm telling you, it yeah.
Okay, so, can I ask you a proper, like, what would have been the proper number? Just like real quick, would have been the right number? What's the right ballpark?
If you would have came at me and said over under, you'll have 60 beers this weekend, I'd have said probably over, but yeah, you're right at it.
Okay,
and Mike's 6'6", 290. I'm 5'8½, 165. Maybe a little bit more than that right now. He's going to drink more than me, but still, I mean, 30 beers, I mean, I'm...
You're still going to get after it.
I'm not listening, Mom, but I'm probably going to have that many myself in a couple nights.
Joining us now, one of the great podcasts in town locally, and not only a Georgia, a damn good dog, Jake Fromm, but also an NFL... Does he get a pension now? Is that what's going on?
I think so, man. Fromm has been in it.
How many years now getting an NFL paycheck?
I've got 5 years in. I haven't got like a full NFL paycheck all five of those years, but man, I'm blessed to have 5 years in the league, and then hopefully we can keep it going and get number six.
Do you agree that playing a ninth SEC game seems somewhat preposterous right now, if you keep the SEC title game and everything else?
Yeah, I think you guys were hitting the nail on the head there. I mean, just you're going to make these coaches' jobs that much harder adding another SEC game. Yeah, it's good for, you know, maybe the brand and for money and TV and all those things, but, man, you're going to make the job of these coaches that much more difficult, the recruiting, the NIL. I mean, this is the madhouse going on right now. And then you also lose the ability to get those cool matchups, you know, versus Ohio State or USC or –
yeah.
You know, these different out-of-conference
teams. Why would you schedule?
You lose that. Yeah, well, no, you're exactly right. Why would you go schedule those games?
With a ninth SEC game. That's just ludicrous.
You wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Jake Fromm is with us. We're going to play buy or sell with you in a second. But we were talking about you've played in the NFL. You played for a national championship in college, the highest level of high school. How hard were you coached? We talked about the Patino speech. I think Kirby coaches your heart always once you're in the program. There's a time to kiss your butt. That's called getting you in there, recruiting you. How hard were you coached over the years from, you know, lower level to the NFL?
Yeah, man, I'm blessed to have had some really, really good coaches. I got coached really hard, but I think I also was very receptive to it. And I wanted to be coached very hard. I was always looking for, you know, a detail, something, whatever it was that I could to get better. So I also kind of looked for coaching as well on my part. I'll never forget my first spring here on campus, spring practice. It was either the first or the second one. We're doing 2-minute drill at the end of practice. I get out there, roll the twos, get a completion, ball's moving. All of a sudden, I step back. Now, you got to remember, we're in helmets and shorts, so there's no shoulder pads here. And then Kirby blows the whistle and says I got sacked, stops the entire drill, and rips me a new one and undresses me in front of everybody in my first, you know, practice ever. So I'll never forget that, and he coached me the same way the rest of my time there.
Jake Fromm, Georgia legend, joining us. You ready for buy or sell?
Let's do it, man. I'm excited to have him on.
All right. The podcast is Punter Pass. Make sure you're listening to it. Two damn good dogs, Drew Butler and Jake Fromm. Buy or sell, Jake. Dan Campbell's the most entertaining coach you've ever played for. Buy or sell?
You know, entertaining, I think there's a lot of other words probably to describe.
Animated. Animated.
I mean, honestly, he's a man of many talents. I'll buy that stock. I may not buy it 100%, but I'm buying that stock right there.
Who's close, if you're going to say animated or entertaining? You've played for four or five NFL coaches. Does anybody else have Does anybody else have his presence?
No. Nobody has his presence. I mean, when he walks into the room, trust me, you know he's there. He's a mountain of a human being, and he commands the room. You know he's there.
Buy or sell, you never get bored in a deer stand. Buy or sell. Never get bored.
Oh, buying that. There's so many things to do.
what
are you doing?
Explain that to me. Yeah, what else is there to do? Are you not
squirrel? Man, you can pray. You can watch squirrels. You can just check out and enjoy the creation
nature
that God has created for you.
Okay.
Man, it is so much. Be still. Be quiet. Enjoy it. I don't get near as much time in the woods as I would like. There's always something to do in the deer stand, man.
I mean, when Jake and I first got to know each other and I told him I didn't hunt, I don't really have any guns to shoot. I mean, he looked at me like I had four eyeballs in the back of my
still
head.
Are you still working with him?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Hey, we only got about 2.5 minutes, so let's rock and roll. Snow is cool. Buy or sell?
Man, that was tough for me. I'm buying it, and then I'm going to sell it very quickly. Snow is really cool the first couple times, but man, let me tell you know, late January, February, March, hey, I'm done with snow. Snow is dirty. Give me the springtime. Yep. Let's warm this thing
up.
Yeah,
it's pretty when it comes down, and then it terrorizes you. And by the way, he's played in Buffalo, Washington, New York, so he knows from snow. Buy or sell, you've watched the 2018 Rose Bowl more than two times. You've watched that game more than two times. Buy or sell?
I don't know. That one's actually kind of close. I watched it on tape a couple of times, but I don't think I've ever sat down and watched the TV copy all the way through.
Well, maybe one of the greatest Georgia games ever. Let's play this song here. I don't know your musical taste, but I know this. Luke Combs. Buy or sell Luke Combs?
Oh, I'm buying that all day long.
Yeah, this song's awesome.
It's my favorite song. This gets me fired up in the morning. When it rains, it pours. Buy or sell, surprised how good all these rookie quarterbacks were this year. You're surprised. Buy or sell?
Man, great class. Buying it. I think Bo Nix is in a fantastic situation. Jaden Daniels obviously came and kicked our butt. And then Caleb Williams, I think, is going to be good in the years to come OC, Ben Johnson.
Are you surprised they played at the level they did, that they had that much success?
Yeah, honestly. I think it's getting harder and harder for young QBs to come in and have success, even though the expectation is there. I just don't think they're getting coached the same or have the same kind of progression through college as they used to.
Eagle fans are the nastiest of the bunch. Buy or sell? Eagle fans the nastiest.
I'm buying that all day long. My father-in-law is from Philly. He's a big Eagles fan. I made my first start in Philly against Philly. It's ruthless up there.
We're playing buy or sell with Jake Fromm, wrapping it up in a little bit. Was awkward in the quarterback room with Jacob Eason and Justin Fields. At some point, it was awkward with Jacob Eason and Justin Fields. Buy or sell?
Selling that. No, nothing was ever awkward. Man, those guys were great human beings and just good, young, early professionals. It was awesome.
Even when you took Jacob Eason's job and he got healthy, you just kept it above the fray, huh?
Man, he's a great teammate. He really was.
Is it? You're an above-average dancer. Buy or sell? You're an above-average dancer.
I may sell the dancer part, but I would say I would buy my stock on karaoke.
Nice. Nice.
Drew Butler is a great broadcast journalist. Drew Butler is a great broadcast journalist. Buy or sell?
I'm buying whatever Drew is doing. Drew is an excellent human being, great professional, and whatever he is interested in, he is going to be going at it 100% competitive, and he's awesome.
Wow.
Wow.
Have eaten fast food in the last week, buy or sell?
Ooh, the last week, selling that. I did have a nice Steak and Shake coming back home from my duck hunt trip in Arkansas. Had two doubles and a cookies and cream.
Wow.
Wow. That's awesome.
I had to tell myself, had to confess.
It's a strong word.
Not good for the temple, but it's all good.
Hey, if you were going to take a Yankee out hunting, what would be your first experience? Are we duck hunting? We deer hunting? We going to catch some boar, wild boar? What are we going to do? What's the best way to make me fall in love?
Man, it just it depends on the person, depends on the time of year. I think turkey hunting's a great
turkey
start.
Turkey hunting, okay.
It's interactive. You're moving. I think the success rate is probably a little bit higher. If they're a tough person, duck hunting, it's a little cold, it's a little nasty, so you really kind of have to be a different person to love that. If they're a calm person and kind of want to relax, you go take a deer hunt.
All right, finally, this guy right here. Morgan Wallen, buy or sell?
Yeah, buying it all day long.
You taking Luke or Morgan Wallen? Who wins?
That's tough. It just kind of depends on the setting. You know, if I need a little upbeat going, I mean, I think Morgan's great. I'd work out to Morgan all day long.
Okay.
But I think on an everyday basis, I think it's tough to beat Luke Holmes.
All right, buddy. Punt and Pass is the podcast. Jake Fromm, congrats on continuing to be a part of the NFL. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Jake.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. Good night.